All right, Genesis 31, if you haven't turned there already, go ahead. We're going to cover the whole chapter today, 55 verses. It's a lot to swallow, but I know you guys can do it. I was reading, you guys know me, I like to keep kind of updated with news and kind of what's happening. And I always also like to hear what people outside of the church have to say about God. I just kind of like to hear what other people's viewpoints on God are. And I read an article from the New York Times, one of the top newspapers, very well known. But I read an article, and because the title caught my eye. The title is this: Our Lives Controlled from Some Guy's Couch. Okay? Now, how many guys are video gamers? You like to play video games? Computer games, something like that, right? Okay? How many guys have like a Nintendo Wii? PlayStation, Xbox, PSP, old school Game Boy. Yeah, nice. I had the old school Game Boy that had, like, you know, the little screen like that big and no color, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And then when Game Boy Color came out, oh my gosh, that was amazing, you know? I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. So you guys know how it is then. You like to play games, you have control, you know, whether it's a game where you're driving a car or you kind of take on the role of someone else and you're shooting people or whatever, right? Lots of different games that we play. Well, that's kind of the idea behind this article. And he talks about God, talks about us, and talks about kind of what he believes our world really is. An interesting idea. Check this out. Until I talked to Nick Bostrom, a philosopher at Oxford University. Now, keep in mind, this guy's a philosopher. He has his PhD from Oxford University, one of the top schools, okay? This guy's a philosopher there. This guy is one of the top brains, all right? So this isn't just anybody who thinks this. Check this out. Until I talked to this guy, philosopher at Oxford University, it never occurred to me that our universe might be somebody else's hobby. I hadn't imagined that the omniscient, omnipotent creator of the heavens and earth could be an advanced version of a guy who spends his weekends building model railroads or overseeing video game worlds. That's what they think. But now it seems quite possible. In fact, if you accept a pretty reasonable assumption of Dr. Bostrom's, it is almost a mathematical certainty that we are living in someone else's computer simulation. That's what this guy thinks, that we are living in a computer-simulated world. Dr. Bostrom assumes that technological advances could produce a computer with more processing power than all the brains in the world, and that advanced humans, or post-humans, could run ancestor simulations of their evolutionary history by creating virtual worlds inhabited by virtual people with fully developed virtual nervous systems. That's what this guy thinks. He thinks that literally right now our world, our reality, is a computer game to somebody else. Isn't that crazy? That there's some dude sitting on a couch munching potato chips controlling our world. That's his view of God. He says the omnipotent, omniscient creator of the universe could be basically a version of a guy who plays video games. What? That's not the God I serve. He goes on to say, it's unsettling to think of the world being run by a futuristic computer geek. Yes, it is. Although we might at last dispose of that classic theological question, how could God allow so much evil in the world? Surely you guys have heard somebody ask that before, right? Well, you serve that God. I don't know about that. How could a loving God, you say your God is a loving God, how could a loving God have all this evil in the world? People ask that all the time. So he says, finally, we could get rid of that question. And here's his answer. For the same reason, there are plagues and earthquakes and battles in games like World of Warcraft. Peace is boring, dude. That's what he says. So this guy's take on God is that he's a guy playing a video game that created our world, and our world only has evil because God gets bored when when there's not war, when there's not famine, when there's not plagues going around. Isn't that crazy? People really think this. Now, of course, we know different. We know our God is not a computer geek. We know our God's not sitting on couch munching potato chips, getting fat. Okay? That's not our God, all right? He's not worried about how things are going to work out. He's not wondering what's going to happen next or who he should strike with a plague to make things fun. That's not our God. Thankfully, our God's much bigger and better than that. But people all around you are going to tell you a lot of different things. They're going to give you a lot of takes on their view of Christianity, their view of your God. It's funny how many people have their own opinions about the God that we serve. But they want to tell you about it. And they want to tell you that you're wrong. I don't know how they know that. They don't even know how they know that. But they know that we're wrong. That's what they believe. And a lot of people believe so many different things. They believe, in fact, a lot of people believe there's no heaven, there's no hell. When you die, you die. You know, some people believe in reincarnation. You come back as something else. And that's why people won't step on bugs, because they may be stepping on a friend that came back as a bug, you know? That's literally the way people believe. And some people say, no, I don't believe in heaven or hell. Well, let me tell you this. Just because you don't believe in something doesn't make it false. You know, I mean, think about it. If you guys, you guys go home, hey, how was service today? Was Kevin there? You know what? I don't believe in Kevin. Does that mean I'm not real? Does that mean I wasn't here? No, I'm still here. I don't care if you believe in me or not. I'm right here. Think about it. I've heard it put this way. If you don't believe in gravity, that doesn't make it wrong. I mean, think about it. No, I don't believe in gravity. If you said that, are you going to start floating away? You know? Obviously not, right? It's not going to work. Just because you don't believe in it doesn't mean it's not true. Heaven and hell are real places. In fact, did you know that Jesus taught more about hell than he speaks about heaven? It's a real place. And all of us are on a road in life. Every one of us. We're going to catch up with Jacob today as he starts a new road trip in his life. But all of us are headed toward a destination. One of two places, heaven or hell. They're real places that every person that has ever lived and will ever live will end up eternally. So where are you headed? Which path are you on? Here's what Jesus has to say about that. Matthew 7, verses 13 through 14. Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. Very few will be on the right path. And those of you in this room who have made a decision to follow Jesus, you are some of those few that are on that path. And you guys know from following Christ that following Christ is not an easy life. We don't follow Jesus because he takes away all our problems. If that was the case, everybody would follow Jesus. In fact, a lot of times following Jesus is a much harder way to live. But it's a much better way to live eternity. Following Jesus will get you to heaven. Not following Jesus will take you to hell. There's two destinations. We're all on a road. Where are you going? Here's what I want you guys to catch today. There's a lot of people that are going to treat you a lot of different ways along this road on life. There's going to be people that are deceitful, unfaithful, unjust. But let me tell you this, God will never be any of those. God is always truthful. God is always faithful. God is always just. And following him is always, did you catch that? I've used that word a few times, always the best way to go. It's never, oh, I don't know if that's the best. It's always. Jesus is the way to get to heaven. If you don't have a relationship with Jesus, you're headed to hell. But it doesn't have to end that way. Jesus has died so you can go to heaven. And so we're going to look today as we pick up back in the life of Jacob at where he's at and what he's doing. Now let me catch you up here. Genesis chapter 28, you guys remember kind of as a review here. Genesis 28, Jacob was about 75 years old, still wasn't married. His dad told him, head to the town of Haran. It's about 500 miles northeast. And I want you to find a godly wife there. So he sets out on this journey. He gets to Haran. Along the way, God gave him a vision, gave him a bunch of promises. So he makes the journey very quickly. He's so excited. Gets to Haran, meets Rachel, his future wife. Everything's going great. Well, now we meet up with him in chapter 31, and it's 20 years later. And there has been a lot that has happened since then. You'll remember he worked 7 years of free labor, not being paid, so that he could marry Laban's daughter, Rachel. Well, Laban, being the deceitful guy that he was, pulled a little switcheroo on his wedding day, made him marry Leah, the older sister, instead of Rachel, the younger sister. So now he wakes up and he's married to the wrong girl. So he gets angry, talks to Laban. He lets Jacob marry his other daughter as well. So now he has two wives, Leah and Rachel. And then they're having problems having kids. So you know what they do? Hey, you should marry my maid so you can have kids with her. Now he has four wives, okay? Leah, Rachel, Bilhah, and Zilpah. Nice, right? Okay? That's their names. So, four wives. We read in chapters 29 and 30 of the 12 kids that he had from these four wives. 12 kids. Now we read at the end of chapter 30, verse 43, thus the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. Okay, so this guy has everything. This guy has a lot of stuff. God has blessed his life, but he hasn't been blessing Laban. In fact, Laban's not following God at all, and because of that, he's reaping the consequences. Things aren't turning out the way that Laban wants them or Laban's sons want them to turn out. And that's where we get, number one, a dangerous detour. Look in chapter 31, verse 1. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all this wealth. And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. So circumstances have taken a dangerous detour here. Everything started out great. But now Laban's sons are not happy. They say, man, look at how many animals this guy has. You know where he got all those? From our dad. And look at our dad's flocks. They're tiny. They're like little wimpy sheep, you know? Come on, man. Look at this guy. He's acquired all his wealth from our dad. They're getting angry. Okay, now Jacob hasn't done anything wrong. God has just simply blessed his flock and not Laban's. But the brothers don't like that. The sons don't like that. So they start to get angry. Jacob sees it. But he also sees Laban. And it says that his countenance was not favorable like it used to be. Do you remember back, let me take you 20 years back, okay? We're going back 20 years, all right? 20 years, Jacob gets to the well, remember? Hey, Rachel, hey, I'm your cousin. Rachel gets so excited. I got to go tell my dad. He's going to be so excited. Rachel runs home. You know who her dad is? Laban. So she says, hey, I just met my cousin. We've never met him before. Laban gets stoked, okay? He takes off sprinting. This is Laban sprinting right here. Can you tell? Okay. So Laban's running. He meets him up at the well. You know what he does? He hugs him. He starts kissing him. Okay, in that culture, all right? Starts kissing him, invites him back over to his house. They have feasts. Everything's great. Everybody's having a good time. Everybody's hanging out. Well, now it's 20 years later, and things aren't working out near as well. Laban's not happy. His flocks are small. Jacob's are big. He doesn't want Jacob to leave. Jacob wants to go. Things just aren't that great. And you know, sometimes when life isn't turning out the way that we want it to, sometimes we respond in the wrong way. You guys ever realize that? I'm sure none of you guys do that, but other people I've heard do that, you know? And they kind of freak out when life doesn't go their way. In fact, there was an example of that in minor league baseball. I don't know if any of you guys pay attention to any of that, but there's a team, the manly team called the Ducks, okay? And yes, that was their name. And so one of the Ducks batters was up to bat, and I'm sure very intimidating since he's on the Ducks. And he's up to bat. The pitcher threw the ball, threw the pitch, hit the batter in the calf. Okay? Now, in baseball, that happens. You get hit with pitches. I've gotten hit with pitches. I used to be a pitcher. I've hit batters with pitches. It just happens. That's just how it is in baseball. When you're standing there and a ball gets thrown at you, there's a good possibility you're going to get hit by it, right? And so in baseball, when that happens, the batter gets to walk and gets to take the base. Well, sometimes batters don't like getting hit by baseballs. In fact, most of the time they don't. In fact, sometimes what they like to do is something called charge the mound. And that means they throw down their bat, sometimes their helmet, and they run after the pitcher trying to beat up the pitcher, all right? That's what they do. Well, this guy this week decided he was going to do that, except he didn't drop his bat or his helmet. He ran with his bat to beat the pitcher up, okay? So he gets hit in the calf. He's like, oh, man. And he looks back at the pitcher, waves his bat, and then starts running at the pitcher with his bat, okay? So the catcher sees it. He's like, dude, I got to stop. This guy's going to beat up my friend, right? So the catcher's running after the batter wielding the bat. And the pitcher's like, what do I do, you know? I've never had a batter come at me. And so the batter gets there, swings, misses the pitcher, swings the bat back, hits the catcher that's now behind him in the head, gives him a concussion that's bad enough that he's out for the rest of the season, swings the bat again, breaks the pitcher's finger. By that point, the benches have emptied. They've tackled the guy. He gets arrested, ejected from the game, and suspended from baseball indefinitely. Isn't that crazy? All because he got hit with the baseball. Hey, dude, don't stand in the way next time. But things didn't happen the way this guy wanted, and so he flipped out. Same with Laban. Same with Laban's sons. They're angry. And they will do whatever it takes, including taking everything of Jacob's, if that's what it takes. They'll do anything. They're angry, and so circumstances have become dangerous for Jacob. Number two, it's time to make an emergency exit. Look at verse 3. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you. So, God sees it too. He sees Laban. He's not happy. He sees Laban's sons. They're not too stoked either. So God says, okay, Jacob, time to get out of here. Look at verse 4. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field, to his flock. Now, this had to be a secret meeting. Check this out. This is Jacob. They're not like meeting in the conference room, okay? This is a secret meeting. It says in verse that we just read, verse 4, that he called them to the field, to his flock. Okay? Picture it. Leah, Rachel hanging out. Jacob walks up. Hey, I'll meet you for a meeting. 4 o'clock out in the field by the sheep. See you there. Okay? So they're like, oh, that's weird. Okay, whatever. So they get out there. Hey, husband, how's it going? Right? So they're out there. Rachel, Leah, Jacob. There's like some sheep over here, some goats chewing on stuff, right? They're out in the field having this meeting. Secret meeting. Why secret? Because Jacob's tried to leave already. And God and Laban doesn't want him to leave. In fact, he's refused to let him leave. Jacob knows that Laban will probably try to take his wives, his kids, his animals if he doesn't leave secretly. Because Laban doesn't want him to go. So look at what he says to his wives in the field, verse 5. And said to them, I see your father's countenance that is not favorable toward me as before. But the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. So then he goes on to say, I've had a dream. God appeared to me. Verse 13, this is God speaking. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land and return to the land of your family. Now this is a big deal. Secret meeting out in the field, sheep, goats. Okay, picture it. And Jacob tells his wives, we have to leave. Your father doesn't like me anymore. He's changed my wages 10 times. and God told me in a dream we have to go. Now, this is a big deal. Rachel and Leah look at him and they know that that means they have to say goodbye to their family probably forever. They'll probably never see their family ever again. Because of the way things were set up, Jacob needed to go, and they would probably never get back to see their family ever again. This is a big deal. And so Jacob proposes this, and he says, we need to go. God has said so. So their reaction is key. What are they going to say? Are they going to freak out? Verse 14. Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? They say, man, I don't even think there's anything left for us anyways here. Verse 15, are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. Verse 16, for all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. Perfect reaction. Look at the end of verse 16 again. Whatever God has said to you, do it. You know, God has told some of you guys in this room to do something. Maybe it's break off a relationship. Maybe it's stop doing this, stop doing that. Whatever it is, God has told you. And your response should be just like Rachel and Leah. Whatever God has told you, do it. Don't hold back. Don't procrastinate. Don't put it off. Do it now. And that's what Jacob does. He doesn't waste any time. We'll see here in just a moment. Because he takes the high road. He decides, you know what? These guys are angry, but I'm not going to stick around to fight it out. I've seen a lot of fights when I was in school. I've seen chunks of hair get ripped out. I've seen faces get slammed into lockers before. And normally it happens because somebody looked at somebody the wrong way, you know? Or somebody said something about my girlfriend or my boyfriend or whatever it is, right? And so a fight ensues. That's always the wrong thing to do. In fact, I happen to remember something about Jesus saying, I believe Matthew chapter 5, something about blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. I also remember him saying something later on, Matthew chapter 7, about praying for those who persecute you. Not sticking around to fight it out. And so Jacob says, let's get out of here. I'm not going to try to defend myself. I'm not going to, whatever, let's just go. God has said to go. So they make an emergency exit. Number three, they hit the highway home. It's time to go. As you'll see, Jacob wastes no time. Look at verse 17. Then Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels. Nice. Okay, so here we are. They're out in the field. Sheep, goats, chewing on stuff, okay? Rachel, Leah, Jacob. Jacob says, we got to get out of here. Your dad's mad. God said, go. They said, sweet. Whatever God has told you, do it. He says, sweet. There's some camels. Load up. He wastes no time. He says, sweet. Let's get out of here. Let's roll. We got to leave. But think about it. He has to get a lot of people and a lot of animals out secretly without Laban finding out. How's he going to do this? Look at verse 18. And he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Think about this. This guy has four wives, at least 12 kids, possibly more, a ton of animals that we just read about, camels, donkeys, sheep, goats, female servants, male servants. This guy's like a traveling petting zoo, okay? And he has to move all of these animals and people out without Laban finding out. How is that ever going to work? How could he ever do that? Well, look at verse 19. Now, Laban had gone to shear his sheep. That's how it's going to work. Because they had this sheep shearing festival going on. And basically what happened was these sheep needed to get their hair cut, basically. Okay, now this wasn't just a simple, hey, let's take the sheep down to the barber salon, okay? It wasn't that simple. This was probably a week-long festival where they spent time shearing the sheep, taking care of these sheep. They had feasts. They had all this fun stuff. Sounds like a blast, right? Bunches of wool everywhere and food. Nice. So they're shearing the sheep. Well, Laban goes miles away to do this. Miles away, he's spending days doing this. And Jacob finds out and he says, you know what? This is our time. We got to get on it. Laban's away, miles away. Let's go. So that's what he does. End of verse 19. And Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. Now, this is a sin. She stole. And it's going to come up to haunt her later on. We'll read about it. Verse 20, Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled. Not he slowly walked away, but he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river and headed toward the mountains of Gilead. So he's gone. This guy's leaving with all his family, all his animals, all his servants. He's on the highway home. He's leaving quickly. And so here he is, headed out. Laban's not going to be happy. He left with his daughters. He left with his grandchildren. What's going to happen? Well, along the highway, as you guys are headed toward your destination, there's going to be a lot of things that you face along the way. Setbacks, hurdles, things that you're going to have to get past and go across that are going to be hard. In fact, soon Jacob would come across a river that he would have to cross with all his family, his animals, the Euphrates River. He would have to go across the river. He would have to go up and down through mountains and valleys. There was a lot of things this guy was going to have to face as he was out here wandering across the wilderness with all these people and these animals. But here's the thing. Jacob's doing the right thing. He's following what God has told him to do. He's pursuing God's promise. He's being obedient. And no matter how hard life is as you pursue God, if you are obeying God, then none of that matters. You don't have to worry about anything. God's going to provide everything you need to make it. So Jacob is trusting in that. But soon he's going to face, number four, a reckless roadblock. Now this kind of closes out the chapter, but it's verses 22 through 55, 33 verses. So hang with me. We're going to read a chunk of it and kind of skip around and see what happens. Verse 22, and Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. Now picture this. Laban's out there miles away from home, shearing the sheep, having this big festival, eating. Messenger shows up. Laban. Yeah, Laban, I have some news for you. Jacob left. Laban's like, oh, that's fine. I didn't really like Jacob anyways, right? Yeah, no. You don't get it. Jacob left with your daughters, with your grandchildren, with his flocks, with his servants, everyone and everything he owned. They're gone. We can't find them. They've been gone now for at least like 3 days. Laban finds this out. Now, in the Bible, they traveled about 20 to 30 miles in one day, okay? So think about it. He has hundreds of animals and people to go with him. He was probably making a good 15, 20 miles a day, if that, trying his hardest to get moving. And so, but now he's 3 days ahead of Laban. Laban finds out. So he's probably 60 to 70 miles ahead of Laban. What's Laban going to do at this point? Well, he decides to pursue him. Look at verse 23. Then he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey. Now, have you guys ever seen those TV shows where it's like the criminal who stole the car or something and he's flying down the freeway and all the police cars are chasing him? You guys seen those cop shows, right? So the cops, they're chasing him down the freeway. They're blocking off exits and, you know, all this stuff. Well, this is kind of like the Bible edition of that TV show, all right? There's like Jacob and all his posse, and they're fleeing, and here comes Laban. He gets his dudes together, and they say, all right, let's chase these guys. So this is like high-speed pursuit, 3 miles an hour, right? And they're like walking really fast to catch up, you know? And so that's what happens. Verse 23 at the end, and he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. So this guy was booking it. He was going as fast as he could to catch up to Jacob. But here's the thing. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. Check this out. I love this phrase just right there in the first two words of verse 24. But God. Because when you read verse 23, we're reading, oh no, I hope Jacob gets away. Great. We read in verse 23, Laban overtook him. Great. What's going to happen? But God. Verse 24, God steps in and he takes over. No matter what you face, but God. God is there. And so we read that Laban was, in fact, verse 25 says, so Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. So Laban and his brothers are pursuing Jacob. They finally see him. He's just a little ways away. So they say, you know what? There's their tents. They're set up camp. Let's set up camp here, because who knows what's going to happen in the morning. Laban was prepared to kill Jacob if he had to. He was so angry at this point. So they set up camp. Well, God steps in. The circumstances may seem a little overwhelming to Jacob at this point, but God is on his side. And so he shows up to Laban in a dream. Now keep in mind, Laban is not following God. But in a dream, God appears to Laban and he says, you better not touch Jacob. I'm on Jacob's side. You better watch out. So he warns Laban. So Laban the next day wakes up and strolls into camp. Try to picture the tension as Laban pulls up and Jacob sees him. Verse 26, and Laban said to Jacob, what have you done? Now try to picture this, okay? Jacob thought he was scot-free, 3 days ahead of Laban. Laban finds out, gets his brothers, pursues him. The next morning, Laban strolls into camp. Hey guys, how's it going? Having a nice little camping trip out here, you know? They can tell he's not happy, right? Laban, Jacob, I can just picture it in my mind. Dust is stirring, right? It's like the Western. Laban strolls in, Jacob on this side. Wah, 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 you know? And they're approaching. And so check it out, verse 26. What have you done, Laban said to Jacob, that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp. Whatever, Laban. Come on, man. Verse 28. And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in so doing. I find it so interesting, right in the middle of Laban's little speech here, that he calls Jacob a fool. Because Laban is making himself out to be the fool. Check this out. Verse 29. It is in my power to do you harm. No, it's not. God's on Jacob's side. But the God of your father spoke to me last night saying, be careful that you speak to Jacob, neither good nor bad. And now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house, but why did you steal my gods? Check this guy out. He's like super ADD kid, okay? Look at this. He can't stay on one topic here. Like Laban, whoa, focus with me here, all right? Look at this guy. He strolls in like, hey guys, what's up? What have you done? I can't believe you took away my kids and my grandkids. I would have, you know, had a celebration for you if you would have just told me. And plus, I could harm you except for your God said not to. And why did you leave it? Why did you steal my gods, man? Look at this guy. Like, dude, come on, focus, man. What are you doing? You're calling me a fool, I would have said if I were Jacob. Look at you, man. And so Laban is making himself out to be not that smart of a guy here, trying to kind of provide this roadblock in Jacob's journey, but it's not working too well. So he gives this whole speech. Why did you steal my gods? Why did you take my kids away? All of this stuff. So Jacob answers, verse 31. Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. With whomever you find your gods. Now, does anybody remember who stole Laban's gods? Who was it? Rachel. You guys remember, Rachel is Jacob's favorite wife. Okay? So Rachel stole the gods. Check this out. Verse 32. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. Kill him, in other words. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. So he had no idea. He says, I didn't steal your gods. Man, check all of our tents. If you find anything that's yours, kill that person. Rachel is in a tough spot now. She's sinned. She's done the wrong thing. And now she's put her life on the line. She's put her family on the line. And now, unfortunately, she makes up a lie to try to cover up her sin. Verses 33 through 35, you can read that Laban went on a search. Okay, he goes into all their tents. He goes into Leah's tent, Bilhah's tent, Zilpah's tent. Hey, what's up, Zilpah? Let me check your tent out, right? So he searches it, finally goes into Rachel. You had to know, Rachel's so nervous. She's sitting in her tent. Hey, Dad, how's it going? And what she's done is she's taken these little idols, she put them probably in the camel's saddle, and then she sat on the saddle. She's just sitting there. Hey, Dad, what's up? You're going to need to get up. I'm searching this place. Sorry, I don't feel very good. I'm going to not stand up right now. So she makes up this lie so she doesn't have to get up. Well, because of that, Laban never finds anything. Searches everybody's tents, everybody's bags. Nothing is found. So, check out what happens, verse 36. Then Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban, and Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? Although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us both. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn by beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was in the day. The drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. Boom, Jacob wins right there. And so now, check out what he said. He said, hey man, I've been watching your flock. Anytime they were giving birth, I took care of those animals. They didn't even miscarry. The animals lived. He said, you know, here I was unable to sleep. There was no food. I was freezing at night. Whenever an outside animal attacked your flock, I didn't make you pay for it. I took one of my animals and replaced it. I bore the loss. He says, man, I've been living with you for 20 years. I've served you 14 for your two daughters, 6 years for your flock. You keep changing my wages. No wonder you're where you're at now. God has rebuked you. And God wins. He always does. So Jacob shows him this. So verse 43, Laban tries to redeem himself. And he sets up this covenant. He's like, fine. Whatever, let's set up a covenant so that you don't come after me, as if Jacob is going to come after him, right? But Jacob says, fine, we'll do whatever. Guys, go get some stones. So they make a big pile of stones to set up this pillar to remind them of this covenant that they're making. This pillar is there. They have a feast. They make this covenant. They call on the name, Laban calls on the name of his gods. Jacob calls in the name of his. Basically, they draw a line and they say, this is my side, this is your side, we won't cross. Let's part ways now. So they head in opposite directions. Verse 54, finally, Jacob is free. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain, surely he is rejoicing here, and called his brethren to eat bread. And they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. And early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place, and we'll never read about him again. Laban's gone. And so here's Laban. The way he ended his life was such a foolish, tragic way to end. But it's because he wasn't following God. And yet Jacob, on the road, pursuing God, following his promises, endured all of this hardship along the way. Man, what's up with that? I thought God would make our lives easy. I don't know why you thought that, because that's not the case. Let me just be real honest with you. The life following God is often hard. It's often challenging. But I can tell you it will lead to eternal life in heaven. Jesus is the only way to get to heaven. And there may be some of you in here today that if I were to ask you where you would go, heaven or hell, if you were to die today, you don't know the answer to that. That's a scary place to be because none of us are guaranteed one more day on this earth. You need to understand that your decision as to whether or not you're going to follow or reject Jesus Christ is the biggest decision you will ever make in all of eternity because it determines where you spend eternity. So if there are some of you in here, which I believe there are this morning, that have never made a decision to follow Jesus Christ, today is your day. Don't wait till tomorrow. Don't put it off. What God has told you to do, do it. And if he's speaking to you this morning, today's your chance. Leaders will be available up here at the end of the service to talk to you and pray with you. Maybe some of you, though, you're like Jacob. You're following God, you're pursuing God, but you're facing a lot of hard things along the way. Stay faithful. Keep trusting in God. God's promises will never let you down. Let's pray. God, you are so good, and we're so thankful for that. Lord, we pray that you would take us, you would use us, you would draw us near to you, Lord. Help us to follow the path that you have set for our lives. We're so glad, God, that when you're on our side, we have nothing to fear. Lord, I pray for any student in this room this morning that doesn't have a relationship with you. God, let today be the last day that that's the case. Speak to them. Show them today how important it is that they serve you with their lives. In your name we pray. Amen. All right, you guys have a great day. Hope to see you guys at the back.